My name is Tim Lorton. I'm the Executive Director of the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee. Thank you for coming to this iteration of State of the Net West, hosted in collaboration with Santa Clara University Law School, the high-tech law institute here. I want to thank Joy Peacock and Eric Goldman and Doris for putting this all together. I really appreciate it. We're a small organization in Washington, D.C., and it's really hard to have a West Coast presence, which we don't, so we're glad to have great partners like Santa Clara. Today, this is the fourth iteration of State of the Net West. We tried to do these technology town hall meetings in August and September, trying to have leaders in the Congressional Internet Caucus converse with leaders in Silicon Valley and academics as well. So the idea is to kind of bridge that conversation, and we've been very successful this year. We're very, very happy with how it's going. This is a prelude to our State of the Net conference, which is in January 17th and 18th. It's the largest information technology policy conference in the country. You're all invited. So let me know if you want to come. We'll be happy to coordinate that with you. Today, we have to start things off, emceeing this particular session is Declan McCullough. Declan is a chief political correspondent for CNET, which is a division of CBS. Declan, and I don't want to date him, goes back a very long time to internet policy, certainly well before me. Between 1998 and 2002, Declan was the bureau chief of Wired News, and he has done everything with regard to internet policy over the past 15 years, so we're really delighted to have him emcee this. He's an avid motorcyclist, and he's an accomplished photographer as well, so a man of many talents. Declan, if you can start us off, please.
Sure. So what we're going to do is have some prepared remarks, then the two of us will chat, and then we'll open up to questions, because you folks are have probably better questions than I do. And so it's my pleasure to introduce a congresswoman who has, more than anyone else in the last year, laid out a conservative manifesto, how not to regulate the internet. It was actually at the State of the Net conference in January of this year, where she said, we must defend against Washington's instinct to hyper-regulate all that is new and imperfectly understood. I know she said that because I was there and I was looking at the article I wrote at the time. And so it's my pleasure to introduce Representative Marsha Blackburn.
Thanks, Declan. Well, good morning, and thank you for the wonderful weather. And Professor Goldman, I don't know who I thank for that, but I'm going to thank you for making certain that this is just absolutely beautiful. And Tim Lorton, thank you for the work you're doing with the Congressional Internet Caucus and with State of the Net. It is certainly a pleasure to be here and to continue these discussions. What I want to do in my prepared remarks is talk a little bit about how I approach tech policy, and then let's talk a little bit about privacy and data and where we are with that, and move on to your questions. You know, every policymaker that you're going to hear from as you go through looking at this issue, everybody is going to come to it with a philosophy of government. And it is no secret that mine is a free market, limited government, low tax, light touch regulatory approach. It is what you would call a conservative approach. And that's the same platform that I take as we look at technology policy. And when we start talking about government involvement in tech policy issues, I have been very engaged in this because I think it's important that I understand the approach the industry brings and that my colleagues are going to bring to this discussion. And for too long, when it came to technology policy, it was seen as a boutique type issue or an unimportant and an intangible issue. So therefore, we just didn't have a whole lot to say about it. It kind of got pushed over to the side. But I have to tell you, I think that the stakes are too high to just leave it pushed over on the side. In my opinion, today's technology policy debates will determine the prosperity of our markets, the viability of future innovation, and possibly even the survival of free speech. They are important. So as we are now in an economy that is based in large part on intellectual property, the contours on this debate will determine the map of 21st century U.S.-based prosperity. And my firm belief is that the internet has thrived due to free market principles and conservative values, and not in spite of them. And we should continue with that limited government, pro-innovation solution, especially now that the U.S. is facing 9% unemployment rates. We can't afford new regulations that are going to stifle innovators. As Congress debates the issues of data, security, and privacy, I was so pleased to come here and visit with you because of the work that is being done here, and much of it is data-driven. The private sector relies heavily on data for testing, improving, growing, and originating new products and services. There is tremendous creative value in the use and the interpretation of data to help us innovate, job create, and improve our economic fate in this nation. The data is in some ways the lifeblood of the internet. I think that you could say the DNA of data is powerful. It is very powerful in today's economy. We're seeing incredible innovations where the new technologies can extract and apply the DNA of data for exciting commercial purposes. Healthcare informatics, which there's a lot of that around my area in Middle Tennessee, they can now anonymously enter health stats into a program and use algorithms to help forestall bad outcomes and to help forecast disease trends or even to predict epidemics. Tomorrow's data revolution has the potential to be our next great industrial transformation. And that is why this discussion is so consequential. Think about this. Your generation faces a new frontier. That frontier is data. Are you going to explore it, protect it, work to commercialize it, respect it, or will you restrict it? And that is for you all to decide. I want to make certain that we respect it and that we protect it and use it. I want my children and grandchildren to be able to experience the full benefits of a pro-data digital economy. To better understand all viewpoints on this issue, as Declan said, we've been active in this. We've held roundtable discussions in New York. I had a roundtable event in D.C. last month. Josh Lynch, who is our legislative assistant handling these telecommunications issues, is here with me today. Last week, he was with us when we did a forum with the Online Publishers Association. Let me relate to you some of the things that we have heard in this series of sessions and forums that we have had about data security, data management, and consumer data protection issues. We've learned that securing the prosperity of our digital economy and ensuring the protection of consumers' most sensitive and private information, or what I like to call the virtual you, is something that every single stakeholder cares about. The virtual you includes a web of things like your online shopping habits, your browsing preferences, and your social interactions. It is the embodiment of your presence online. Of course, that web of interconnected data is constantly growing and constantly changing as new opportunities open up on the web. On one hand, it's exciting because of the possibilities it unleashes for our economic future. At the same time, it causes some people to take pause because we're witnessing the proliferation of privacy concerns and online data theft. Both government and industry have a mutual vested interest in seeing the virtual you grow and enjoy the protections that have been afforded in the brick and mortar world in those relationships. However, I offer a word of caution. Consumer trust in online information collection and data management has eroded. We hear this all the time. in committee testimony, and in our town hall meetings. Consumer confidence is dangerously close to a tipping point. That tipping point will lead to uncertainty that could suffocate the growth and innovation that we have all come to expect online. We must avoid that uncertainty, and uncertainty has come up many times in our forums, because just as we have seen with the healthcare and financial service industries, when we fail to lead with solutions that are pro-business or pro-market solutions, then bureaucracy and big government rush in, and generally you don't like what is left in their wake. Here's what usually happens. Government solutions to online privacy concerns evolve either from the left in the form of hyper-regulation from a menu of agencies, or from a classical liberalism perspective that defines private information as property. The concern is for solutions being spurred from action by shrewd activists and morning headlines, and not by careful and thoughtful consideration of the facts of the marketplace. An example is the FCC's so-called net neutrality decision. That was a hyperactive, counterproductive example of what happens when government thinks it finds a problem it feels the urgent need to fix, in case someday it does become a problem. What all stakeholders need to understand is that the federal government loves to fill a vacuum. And it does that in a powerful way. They are a broker that has no problem picking winners and losers in that field vacuum. For the online world to continue to thrive, we need real leadership that answers consumers' desire for certainty. That's why we need industry leaders to move swiftly to find a workable solution to the challenges that our online consumers face. We need to give them a credible level of transparency and at least a fighting chance to protect their personal identifying information or their sensitive data. We must do this if we hope to sustain a healthy and thriving creative economy. Government's role here is not to try to keep up with the changes in technology. Washington's view of digital privacy is too subjective. That is why industry must proactively and credibly ensure that individuals know more about what data is being collected about them and how that data is being used. My core message, my warning to everyone today, is to empower consumers before the government empowers itself. Something else that we've heard. The first step should be to move data regulation under one roof and to level the privacy playing field for consumers and for covered entities. Whatever consumers deserve, they deserve consistent, transparent protection, no matter what technology platforms they might use at any given time. We know those are going to change and those are going to expand. Consumers' digital fingerprints should be guarded equally across the technology spectrum. Our current dual structure of both FCC and FTC jurisdiction only serves to blur the lines of protection. If we defragment government's jurisdiction in this arena, we give consumers the clarity, the certainty, and the consistency that they are looking for. The FTC has the experience and the expertise in this arena, and therefore, this is an area where they should have the jurisdiction. And we know that if you move forward and you identify potential harm to market competition in order to further consolidate the power, then sometimes that's not a good foundation for a workable privacy regime. If interested participants fail to voluntarily enter into a credible structure of self-governance in this new information age, the FCC will, in all likelihood, broadly define regulatory structures basically out of thin air. Under the thumb of the FCC, no safe harbor provisions will exist, and no entity doing business online will avoid the frustration, the layers of unanticipated bureaucracy, and the heavy costs that are generally associated with the items that the FCC moves itself in toward. Everyone across the data supply chain should be responsible, number one, for safeguarding what they know, and number two, for what they can control. The total responsibility should not be placed alone on the consumer-facing entity. Balancing the individual's desire to control his or her own information, which we hear a lot in the testimonies in town halls, and the economy's drive toward greater efficiency is possible, but not if industry and Washington's only solution is to ignore the problem and start to build firewalls. An overly expansive privacy regulation for the internet would block consumers and competitors' access to the e-commerce marketplace. That's why policymakers need to encourage flexibility in their approach. It's why the industry should lead in establishing best practices, and it's why regulators should and must provide clarity and consistency in the work that they do. Government should default to the do no harm standard and focus its current enforcement authority on tailored solutions that are specific to needed instances. When Washington does propose new regulations, these rules must force on addressing clear, identifiable harms. Obviously, sensitive health stats, account identifiers, and financial records need to be protected, and some laws are already in place for governance on these. The key is to give consumers the confidence that they are seeking. Online consumers want the assurance that their information is not going to be stolen and that it is not going to be abridged. Finally, and maybe most importantly, Washington must lead by example. What is frightening, and we've heard this in our forums and roundtables, is the scope of data the government holds and controls about private citizens. We need to rethink our framework for government's collection, retention, and storage of individual information. We must do this because the federal government should be leading by example. A pro-market vision to these issues assumes the imperfection of mankind and a preference for markets, not politics, to drive the outcomes. I would suggest that if politicians were ineffective at engineering society before the digital age, that they might not be the best at keeping pace in this new data-driven era. Those of us in this room represent the creative economy. You lead in providing innovative solutions to the world's biggest tech problems. Online privacy and data security issues stretch beyond time and location, but a pro-business approach that returns to the time-tested business adage that the customer is always right just might be a prudent starting point in this discussion. Instituting a solution that respects all people in the digital space would foster and harmonize our industry for another generation. It's time for the leaders of the creative economy to come together to provide some good, solid, creative solutions, and for Washington to let the Silicon Valley do what it does best, innovate and inspire. Thank you so much for the invitation to join you today. Back to you.
Okay. Thank you, Congresswoman, for that. It's a breath of fresh air compared to what a lot of other politicians have, what might say on the topic. Here's a question. You're worried about federal privacy legislation going too far. But some of the companies out here, Google comes to mind, just up the road off the 101, say they actually want a sweeping omnibus federal privacy law. So why do you think they're saying, please regulate us? No, please bring it on. Is it because the cost of complying with regulations might squeeze out startups and then the entrenched companies win? Or is it something else?
You know, I don't know. I would never speak for another member of Congress, and I certainly wouldn't presume to speak for a company in the private sector. But what we have seen is the growth of the federal bureaucracy in so many sectors of our nation's economy. Mm-hmm. And people are beginning to talk more and more about that overreach of regulation and the impact that it has. And it doesn't matter if it's healthcare, if it's education, if it is financial services, if it is any number, the automotive industry. They talk about the impact of this regulation. Many companies are saying, look, we want some certainty. We want to know what we're dealing with for a longer period of time, because it's difficult for us to develop a business model that is going to be relevant 5 years if the rules and regulations keep changing every 6 months. And more often, we are hearing the private sector say certainty would be nice. But in that certainty, we sure would like it if you're rolling back regulations instead of adding new regulations.
And so your perspective on privacy is, I think, unique. A lot of other members of Congress haven't taken the time to look into the topic as much. And another question would be, I suspect that the Republican young guns who are out here at Facebook on Monday, including Mr. Ryan, Mr. Cantor, might agree with you, but you, when the Republicans were in control of Congress last time around, we saw laws like the Deleting Online Predators Act, which would restrict Amazon/social networking sites with user profiles from computers at schools and libraries. There was an anti-spyware bill that the companies out here opposed, and these things were getting floor votes. Has something changed? Can you get your Republican colleagues on board this time around?
I think that what we are seeing, I don't know if I would say if anything has changed. I think there is an awareness that the 21st century economy, much of the transactional end of the 21st century economy, is going to be conducted online. Look at the business models that existed for brick-and-mortar businesses. Look at the relationships that were there in those businesses. Now, I imagine if you were to think about businesses that you have interacted with over a given period of time, you may now see many of those businesses having become click-and-mortar businesses. And maybe if it's a small business entity, the next generation of that family is looking at moving away from a brick-and-mortar establishment and into a virtual marketplace template. So as our economy has changed, we need to be looking at what has existed. What have the best practices been in the brick-and-mortar world? And then how do you make that transition into a virtual marketplace? How do you take those lessons that were learned in one and apply it to another? Where do those areas of sensitivity need to be? Customers are also beginning to say, as they conduct more transactions online, then they are beginning to say, hey, look, we want to understand these privacy notifications. You know, it's not unusual now for me to go to a town hall and have someone who is an older, maybe a senior citizen, come in and talk about running a blog, talk about the amount of activity that they conduct online, and talk about how they use this as a resource. So what customers are beginning to say is, hey, how can I set those firewalls? So I don't know if it is so much that things are changing from that perspective as much as it is an awareness that this is a large component of the transactional activity of the American public.
But let's open it up to questions from the audience. I suspect that some of you might have something you want to say to Tim.